Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another patron episode of Science vs. Fiction. This is Stephen and I discussing Firefly, Episode 3, Bushwhacked. Stephen, good to talk to you, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am great. This is a great episode. I'm looking forward to it. Do we have any preface here, or should we just kick in and get rolling?
Let's just roll right into it. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say once it starts.
I am on paused. The episode is paused at like 4 seconds on Hulu. So on go, we're going to all hit unpause. So 3, 2, 1, go. All right. Now we have this little prologue that has caused a little bit of argument between me and Steven, that he believes this prologue, and he could be 100% right. He could be that this little prologue here is on the Blu-ray episodes, whereas I'm fairly certain that they're not. But it is still somewhat familiar to me, so maybe it's on
I've never seen the Blu-ray episode, but I have seen the DVD, and I'm virtually certain it's on the DVD.
Okay, and it is a cool little prologue that I can see, like,
too. There's two different ones. There's this one, and then there's one that Mal delivers.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, yeah, if you're watching Hulu, you may have gotten these little prologues that kind of set up the universe, and I would testify in a court of law that those prologues are not on the Blu-ray episodes, and maybe they are on the DVD. So, let's move on, because it's not interesting.
I'm sure somebody can, you know, well, actually, us on Twitter when they listen to this. So, future basketball?
Hoopball or something. I mean, what Whedon is doing here, and it's like, finally, you're watching the characters really cut loose. No one's trying to kill them in this moment. Nobody's angry at anybody at this moment. And they're being playful and having a good time together. And it's this kind of stuff that makes people really gravitate towards Whedon's work. It's this sense of character and community, and I like this girl. I hope she interacts with that guy and this girl, and they go on an adventure. And it's like that whole idea of a colorful ensemble that has countless permutations for fun and drama and tragedy and comedy. It's great. It's just great.
And so now he's once again, he's sort of explaining her backstory. It's interesting again, because I think this is a pre, pre-TiVo essentially show, a pre-serialized, like fully serialized shows. Because this scene in part is, I think, designed to catch the audience, you know, including the audience who's never seen the show before or don't necessarily remember what they saw last week in great detail, like to fill them back in a little bit on backstory.
Yep. I love Wash. Yeah. Who's flying this? We're both, you make a very good point, but I'm just waiting for Wash's joke. He's so funny. He is real. I mean, they're all funny in their own way, but I really do appreciate Wash's enthusiastically goofy sense of humor.
Yeah.
This was originally, this was written to be the third episode and it actually aired. This is the third episode, and it aired as the second episode on September 27th, 2002. And it's a great episode if you want to maybe bring some new viewers in. Again, I will speak for both of us when I say no freaking way should Fox have done what they did to this series.
Right.
However, if you're trying to lay a couple of breadcrumbs for genre fans, for sci-fi fans, this is a good episode because it's got a lot of fun. It's got some really good action.
Scary in moments.
Yep. Yep, and it drops just enough, you know, like what we call arc stuff or serial stuff that, you know, does connect to other episodes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you touched on it, Stephen. At this point in TV drama in the 2000s, it was almost as if producers were still afraid to go full serialized.
Oh, absolutely.
They were, and it's like you could almost see you could see them having meetings where they're like, okay, 8% of your episode references future episodes or past episodes. We want that down to 4%. You could actually see it, like, you know, the creators trying to build a bigger mythology and build a bigger world. And because studio or TV executives at that point were so enmeshed in the whole Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Magnum P.I., T.J. Hooker. None of those shows had any connective tissue to the other episodes.
It made a lot of sense, you know, in any era prior to this one, because you couldn't catch back up. And the worry from a business point of view is that you're only going to lose audience and you're never going to gain audience, because everybody, if they miss an episode, they're going to maybe stop watching, but nobody's going to be able to come in
exactly.
And start. You know?
And then you get into syndication, and if you want to syndicate Love Boat, you could put those episodes in any order. It doesn't matter what episode Love Boat is in. But if you were to serialize something like The Expanse or Battlestar Galactica, even, you would not, it wouldn't work. It would not be smart.
One of the few shows that I remember having a very definite sort of at least season long arc before this was, weirdly enough, was Seinfeld, which had the whole season four arc about them making the show about nothing. And, you know, each episode sort of obviously had to stand alone on its own, but there was also this long-term arc over the course of that whole season about them trying to make this television show. And within the show itself, they were making this show and then talking to these executives and having some of the same arguments.
No, you're right.
With their executives about trying to serialize the show.
Yeah. And you know why? Obviously, you could see any other sitcom producer say Night Court or Cheers. They're saying, let's make our entire fourth season kind of an arc. You know, it has like a three-act structure, and you kind of do have to keep up. And most TV executives would say, good God, no, get out of my office. But Seinfeld, by that point, they're like, yes, sir, whatever you want to do, sir, that's cool. We'll do part four. You want it to be an interlocked movie? Fine.
I mean, in a sense, though, that was kind of the season that really brought them to like – the huge mainstream success. I don't know that they had that power then. I think, honestly, especially for the first couple seasons of that show, like the NBC was just kind of like, all right, this is our kind of weird little duck show. Let's just kind of let them do their thing and see what happens. And they got lucky. I don't think anybody expected that show to be successful at any point. So anyway, let's get back to talking about this show, which nobody also expected to be successful. And then they made sure that it wasn't.
Yep. And it is kind of a bittersweet story, because on one hand, the show did not get the chance it deserved. It showed up at the wrong time. If it had showed up 5-7 years later, it could have been a much bigger hit. And the studio shanghaied it. Like, your own bosses torpedo your work. You work for 7-8 months to make something, and then your own bosses kill it. You know, it's like, but the silver lining is we still got, 14 great episodes. We still got a movie out of it, and that's not nothing. That's a lot. You know, it's good art that we got out of it, you know, divorced from all the bullshit that happened back then. We still got a great pilot, 13 episodes, and a damn good movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know. There's a way in which almost just the familiarity of being able to just sit and watch the entire series in a week or two is interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think you meant night or two.
I mean, you could, I guess, if you wanted to watch 7 hours a night. But
I watched the entire run of Firefly for these episodes.
Those of us
who have
lives and children have to space it out over a little bit.
I have a very busy life, a very busy and miserable life. Thank you. But no, I do not.
All right, so wait. I got to point of science. We got lights in the helmets. We got lights shining in their eyes, because of course we do.
Mm-hmm. And what's going on here, Steven? What's the plot, essentially? They've come across a ghost ship, and Mal and his crew are looking for survivors and or salvage.
Well, they're kind of hoping there aren't survivors, I think, because they're going to want to take for themselves whatever.
And it's worth noting that this episode written and directed by Tim Minear, who is, in my opinion,
hold on. Was that
Red Balloon
reference?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it was like a deliberate It reference?
No, but it is odd that there's a red balloon just sitting there in this spaceship.
That's why I think I don't know. I don't know if Minier or Joss Whedon are like well-known Stephen King fans or something, but that just felt too obvious to me.
To me, it was meant to be one of those hints like, and the coffee was still warm. That's what it's meant to be, you know, because if there's still helium in that balloon, then it must not have been there that long, right? So,
right.
So, like, to me, it's just a clue of someone's been here recently. But it is creepy, and maybe it is an It reference. What the hell do I know? But, I mean, just
now,
having
wait,
a red...
So do
you
we,
could, you know, it's funny that you go directly to It when there's a world-famous short film called The Red Balloon from that predates It by, like, 40 years, and we both go
yeah,
to It.
Could be. I don't, well, maybe it's because the movie, you know, is fairly recent.
Yeah, it's still coming.
No. I was just going to say, so did they establish definitively that there's no oxygen on that ship? That's why they're wearing spacesuits, right? I mean, I know later
not
on
yet.
They come in and they have gotten life support back up. But from a scientific point of view, if there's no atmosphere on that ship, then you couldn't have a balloon. It would explode. It would be nothing but gas inside the balloon and nothing outside the balloon, and it would just blow up and pop when the cabin depressurized. So
keep that in mind, everyone. If you're ever going to a child's birthday party in a space station, don't bring balloons. Don't bring helium anyway.
Or don't decompress the space station. It would probably be better advice, considering you're having a child's party, to not.
This is dynamic. This is a fun dynamic in this show. It's Jane with River and Simon.
It's another thing they're so good at throughout. Again, even over the course of these 14 episodes, like, there are little individual relationships. There's an episode coming up where River and Shepherd Book have a whole arc together. Like, they went out of their way to sort of give everybody individual
And you could really sense that
relationships.
Not only is that what Whedon and his collaborators, in this case Tim Minear and other writers, are really good at, not only that, but they're enjoying it. It's like, you not only do you get to build 9 action figures, but now you get to spend, you know, 17 hours giving them adventures. And that's basically what it is. And Whedon seems to have such a joy in creating characters and then bouncing them off each other. Oh, God. See, now, you remember 2 episodes ago when I thought that the prank about Kaylee dying was too cruel?
Yeah.
This joke is not too cruel. This one is great. And then she says, the punchline, the inadvertent punchline at the end is, you didn't have this on right. And, you know, it's like, it's that really smart balance that good writers know is, all right, this is a haunted ship episode. They're exploring a haunted ship. And for the machinations of that plot, we really only need 25, 30 minutes. We don't need the full 43. So you know what we're going to do for 13 minutes? They're going to play ball. And they're going to play pranks on each other.
Yeah.
And they're going to argue a little. And then, you know, then we'll spend the remaining 30-some minutes on this haunted ship story. And it's like that, it's something that you have to get innately. There's no perfect formula for how long you spend on story versus how long you spend on character shading. You just have to be a good writer and have to work with good writers to say, oh, it's... Yeah, and good actors. We don't have enough character, or our plot is too thin. There needs to be a balance of both. And I think that Whedon and Minear and who else wrote these episodes? Jane Espenson, whoever else worked on this show, are masterful writers. I think they're great writers. Not just because they wrote an adventure show that I like, but they really seem to know, like, the art of writing. There's more to it than just, oh, I wrote a cool character.
So now we'll get to this eventually in the movie. But I'm trying to remember right now whether her psychic ability is a thing that predates her being captured by the Alliance, or if that's something that the whatever they did to her gave her that ability, or is that why they captured her and started?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think the show leads us to believe that she was just hyper, super, innately, bizarrely, preternaturally intelligent, and then they kind of exploited her brain and turned her into other things beyond just super, super smart.
Yeah, that's my remembrance, but I don't remember for sure. Well, because, I don't know, maybe part of me also feels like the scientist in me is like, that's not a thing.
Right. You can't so, you can't like, tweak
I don't
someone's
want that
yeah,
to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Your logical brain says, wait a minute. If I went into your brain and flipped one switch, you're not a psychic. We don't know how to do that.
Right.
And
the weird way that suspension of disbelief works, like I would have an easier time buying that she just was a psychic and in this world that kind of thing sort of just exists than I do buying the idea that they sort of like turned her into one by accident.
No, you're right. I get that. You're like, because we're willing to buy she was born with it more.
See,
so than
there was a beach ball right there too. Also,
yeah,
contains.
Look at that beautiful shot with the lights coming in. That beautiful shot of her,
which would also
wandering.
Have exploded if the ship had decomprised. So if these guys were a little bit more observant, they would have known.
If this episode is you know written and directed by
Chinese
my niece, Tim
characters yeah. on the thing, I had never noticed that before.
Because I watched Serenity the other night, and I scoured the credits, and I noticed that Mr. Marnier was in no way involved with Serenity, which seems kind of short-sighted, because he was a large part of why the show is so good. Wheaton is obviously, you know, the guy in charge, but, you know, watch this episode alone to see what that Tim Minear got, which else Wheaton was going for.
Yeah. Again, this you know, I love shows... movies, whatnot.
A lot of toys in this episode, Stephen. Well, you made me notice that. Well, the balloon,
I think,
ball,
again, they're
the doll.
Trying to reinforce that there's families, that there were families here, that it wasn't just, you know, a bunch of space roughnecks. You know, it was people.
Kids, right.
Right.
Don't look up.
So this, I remember they established the Reavers briefly in the pilot, correct?
Yeah.
So this is not the first time that we've seen them, but this is the one of the first times that we really
this seems,
get a
this
sense
seems
of,
to, yeah,
what we're capable
this,
of.
This seems to be the episode that they said, all right, we have to explain exactly what the Reavers are. Like, not the truth of what they are, but we have to at least establish
right.
what these characters
how
believe they
are. Right.
Yeah. And I just love Whedon's concept of, look, every genre has them. It's like pirates, run, no, pirates, or, you know, there's this over dominating threat somewhere.
Well, in this case, pirates with space dementia.
Yeah. Oh, it's pirates with space dementia and cannibalism. and of course, we won't find out the true truth about the Reavers until we
the
arrive
movie.
At Serenity, until the movie.
Yeah, which again, because I saw the movie long before I ever watched the series, when I sat down to watch the series, I kind of assumed that the Reavers were going to play a much bigger role. And again,
we're getting into some deep, dark spoilers here, but I just like the idea that they spend 14 episodes establishing that these are men who had nervous breakdown, essentially, got to the edge of space, went crazy, and joined this, like, blood-hungry cult. And it's kind of a romantic, dark, creepy, fun concept in science fiction, but it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because they're not like organized union people. So when we get to Serenity and it's established that, no, they were created by our own fault, our own mistake. We created this entire race of madmen. That to me works so much better than just, oh, they randomly all went crazy and got together.
Well, again, I don't recall the exact details of what they do and don't reveal during the episodes.
As far as Firefly the show goes, they're always just ravaged men. They're not. It's not
right. But
not
I'm talking
victims.
About in terms of where they came from or what. No, again, obviously, and I know that we don't ever know that the Alliance was behind it. But I'm talking about in terms of what their theories are as to whether or not they are. Like, there's a difference between because in the movie that we establish that they're like, you know, berserkers essentially. They're literally like crazy, right? Whereas
yeah,
I think in a lot of this
feral,
stuff, right.
like feral wild men, yes,
right. But I feel like in the series, at least up to this point, they could just be really, really bad dudes. You know what I mean? Like
true, yes, like ultimate Hell's Angels from outer
right,
space.
Exactly. Like so, we don't know that whether or not they're just like. You know,
yes.
an evil biker gang, or
to, yes.
they're
to this
like
point,
zombies,
we do,
you know?
Up to this point, and it will change very soon, we do not know the true depth of their depravity. We only know that they're monstrously scary, and even Jane and Mal and Zoe are afraid of them. So...
getting a little bit
ahead
of this...
I'm sorry. Gina Torres can do more with her eyes than most actors can do with their entire upper torso. She has these amazing eyes that she just throws around the room. She doesn't even have to move her head, and you get her anger or her tenor. She is just, she's a great actor. She's great.
So this, I feel like this episode kind of a little bit cheats what we ultimately find out in the movie about the Reavers. And I'm getting ahead a little bit here, because by the end of the episode, this dude right here goes insane and starts cutting himself and basically turns into a Reaver. You know, and Mal implies that it's because psychologically it's the only way he can sort of cope with having survived this attack from them. But then obviously in the movie, it's made clear that the Reavers were made by this chemical.
Physiological, yeah, water, yeah. It's not, right? It's not psychological, it's physiological, exactly.
So I'm wondering I feel like he has to have known.
Right. Wouldn't Simon have been able to detect some kind of anomaly or sickness?
No, I mean, I'm just talking about Joss Whedon has to have known where he was going with this. I mean, he established the Reavers and he established River so early that, like, the connection between them, he must have, you know, and then he decided to make a movie just to explain that because he never got to explain
never that occurred connection. To me. If we know the reality of the Reavers is that they were infected by an inadvertent drug, an accidental infestation or a release.
Well, it was a purposeful one, but it just didn't do what they intended.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but they weren't meant to turn them into monsters.
Right.
A nerve agent. And you would think that, okay, now that this guy's on the ship, Simon, super doctor, might be able to go, you know what, Mal? I don't think it is psychological. I think it's infection. I think all the Reavers, you know, you would think that he'd be able to get that.
I don't think it is. I mean, again, I don't think it's an infection. Like, I don't think it was biological. I thought it was chemical.
So they infected him on purpose.
Well, so I'm just, again, I'm wondering if, I mean, somewhere on the internet right now, there's a Reddit thread devoted to retconning how this guy went insane because he got, you know, like the Reavers' blood has this chemical in it, and I don't know. Like, I imagine there's some.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily just explain it away of one Reaver spit in his mouth. There you go. Now he's infected. Boom. I explained it. Leave me alone now.
Yeah, but again, that never gets established at any point in the mythology of the show that that's a thing that can happen.
Yeah, true.
So it's interesting. I don't know. Again, maybe if he'd had more episodes to explore this mythology, that it all would have started.
I mean, it feels like somebody was telling a long story, and then halfway through, I said, "Cut to the end right now." Yeah. And you cut out most of Act Two, or the second half of Act Two, and most of Act Three, and like now you have to finish it. That's your Serenity. That's your movie. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, I can establish how the Reavers came to be, but man, I had like six or seven other stories before I got there, you know?
Yeah. It makes me wonder, though, when – because, you know, you watch the movie now and that feels like the thing that the show was building towards in some sense.
Right.
So you wonder when he planned to reveal that information in the world of the show, and then what would have happened after that in terms of like how do you then – like once you explain why, you know, it's like the Twin Peaks phenomenon. Like as soon as you explain who killed Laura Palmer, it's kind of like, okay, well now what, you know, or the moon.
Yeah, I know,
like,
you know,
won't they get together? And then once they get together, you're like, okay, well now what's going to sustain the long-term interest in the show? And so it's
that's a great question. You're like, let's imagine that, let's say Firefly season one, then let's say that Firefly season two would have been the events of Serenity stretched out to 13 episodes. Okay.
But it wouldn't have Chiwetel Ejiofor, which would have
right.
Been
but
tragic.
Then what would season three be?
The
colonies realizing that the government is completely at fault and now they're all fighting back against the Alliance.
Well, you wonder sort of how much of that serialization is, you know, you hear different things from different people that work on different shows. Like I know that like Breaking Bad, apparently they were laying track like a couple episodes ahead, and it's a miracle that like they ended up with this five or six season arc that managed to sort of tell a complete story, because they didn't walk into it knowing where Walt was going to end up or knowing, you know, what was going to be the end of the show. Obviously they did the same thing in Lost, and in Lost they kind of
fell apart
because they didn't know where the heck they were going. I think you had the opposite problem with Game of Thrones recently, where they knew where they were they needed to get to, but they didn't really sort of think hard enough or really, you know, plan out exactly how they were going to get there. And so it felt a little...
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked about this. I thought the final season of Game of Thrones was pretty damn good. Maybe not 5-star amazing, but 4-star pretty damn good. And then you think about it and you go, well, how would I have ended it to make everyone happy?
Yeah, I but that's exactly what I mean, though. I feel like they all of the plot points were there for it to be a great ending. It just that it didn't have enough room to breathe to make you feel like the characters had earned their way to those end points. And so I don't know. But again, it just makes you wonder here, like, again, because this was still in this episodic. Makes you wonder how much they were going to. Weave the Reavers into the story. I have not watched the whole run yet. I'm only about 6 or 7 episodes ahead of where we are right now, so I don't really remember.
I think they're peppered in really. Yeah. I think they're peppered in really well. I think that he never wanted the Reavers to be a major plot point, but it always wanted it to kind of hang there in the back, like the Alliance.
So you know, that he like, would the, then the Alliance right are in not a future part season, of every right would yeah, then have yeah. have the opportunity to explore that more.
It does make one wonder, had nobody to this point thought, hey, maybe the Reavers are infected with something. Maybe they're not. Like, you would think that somewhere across the universe, people would realize, yeah, they're not just madmen. Somebody, like, literally infected them with drugs.
Those, by the way, those cases, I have one of those in my closet. They're rack cases for audio equipment.
Oh, right. The one looking at it right now. I'm sorry, I'm getting caught up in the episode. Mm. Oh, there's some digital animation right there.
Yeah, it doesn't
those wire
quite
things
all the way work, but
no, but it's set.
But for a TV show in 2005 or whatever.
Yep. Plus, earlier in the film, they show them going in earlier in the episode, and I'm like, wait, what is that? You know, so at least they've established it. And it would have been just as easy to do it with something like, you know, mechanical, but.
So the other day on Twitter, I was somebody I follow began a tweet with something along the lines of, I don't understand how Serenity, the movie, even exists, and went on this long diatribe. And I was expecting something about this world and how difficult it was for him to get that made. And instead, it was just talking about how terrible it was and how did the actors even bother to sign on and whatever else. And then I realized that they were talking about apparently this more recent movie called Serenity. Came out in 2015.
Yeah, that I've heard amazing things about. I've heard the whole thing spoiled up and down. And what do you think about this design? What is that? The
it's very Borg-like, to be completely honest.
But I mean, I love the idea of something that looks like
looks
a
like
small
a
city.
Yeah, no, yeah. Which is
no, it doesn't. It looks like several buildings. Right, that's what I like. Yeah,
right. But like the point is that like if you're gonna build a ship, especially a ship like that, it's obviously not designed to go into an atmosphere, and so like you're gonna want to build it in the most efficient, space efficient way of building it, which is you know the reason why we build buildings the way we build buildings is because that's a very efficient way of allocating space, and so it makes some sense that you would just have this. City.
Steven, you're gonna throw a little love towards the great Doug Savant here?
Sure.
This blonde gentleman is Doug Savant, who I watched every single week in my youth as one of the cast members of Melrose Place. He is, of course, best known.
I've ever seen an episode of Melrose Place.
Well, you're younger than me. And Doug Savant also appeared as one of the only funny people in a really terrible film from 1998 called Godzilla. And in Godzilla, Doug Savant inadvertently destroys half of New York by missing Godzilla with various rockets and whatnot.
We will get to that movie eventually. I think it's better than you give it credit for. But then again, I'm
oh, it's atrocious. It is not. Yeah. I'm also just a big fan of character actors too, and that's why I recognize Doug Savant. So there. And he has some good bits later when he's interrogating them. There's like some really funny acting. He really fits well with this ensemble, I think. He has kind of this bemused detachment
that I think, can't see those without this is literally what my amplifier looks
yeah.
like. It's sitting right next to me in that exact same case.
Yeah, like, yo, Mal and Simon, yo, set these down. We gotta do roadies. Some recording.
Let's go, guys. Come on.
Maybe they're shooting an independent
show
film
starts tonight, at 7 p.m. We gotta finish building the stage. Do a sound check.
I wonder if their sound department would like come in the morning and be like, oh, Josh took four of our cases for their space shipping in.
I wonder if they filled them with too, because they clearly have some actual weight to them. Unless the actors are just really good at pretending there's weight.
Yeah.
I like the hiss. I don't know, especially coming after the soundless shot outside. I mean, I would imagine anytime you have two spaceships dock against one another, the atmospheric pressure inside the two ships is never going to be exactly matched. And so when you open the hatch between them, air would move from one to the other or vice versa.
Starship Troopers.
Yep.
This is a great sequence. I mean, it's only the third episode, but already we feel a real kinship with the cast and a real comfort in the ship. And when there are invaders, even if they are legally allowed, we don't like it. We don't want these guys on Serenity. We want them out. It's just, you know, and it's just really fun, you know, setting up various exploits and dangers for this crew to get in and just pluck them out through just the most intricate ways. And
well, it's such a classic sort of storytelling thing where, like, you identify with whoever the storyteller wants you to identify with. You can imagine a version of this story that's told from that guy's point of view, where, like, this is a band of rebel scum who are, I mean, we tend to like underdogs, I guess, but you can still imagine a version where, like, this guy is beleaguered and he's being, you know, his boss is breathing down his neck about trying to capture these people that are these terrorists, and, you know, and
it's part of the reason I like this performance so much, because he could be right up in Mal's face, you know, like, he could be a monster, you know, he could just be sneering. And the idea that he's half bored and half officious, you know, is just, that makes sense. He's not evil. He does work for an evil organization, but this guy's just a businessman. He's just a cog in the machine, really.
Yeah.
She always gets mad when somebody calls, says that it's a piece, when somebody says it's a piece of crap or whatever. They get so mad.
Are we? Yeah.
Space brothel. Welcome to Inara's ship. This right here, this whole sequence where he's interviewing each of them, love. I could have another 20 minutes of this.
So there's an interesting moment there where he says, he calls it the Serenity, and she's like, it's just Serenity.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what the significance of that moment is entirely, but.
Because if you say, I'm a part of Serenity, that is, you know, that has dual meaning. Then you have subtext. Serenity is part of me. When you itemize it as an item, you know.
Right, but the fact that she goes out of her way to correct them is a choice by the writers to have her do that. And
it's also kind of like that thing where people say, oh, you go to Ohio State? And they go, no, the Ohio State. You know, like, that's the name. You know, I don't say the Steven. It's Steven. But yeah, no, it is interesting that she would choose to, you know, instead of just shutting up.
That's, I mean, I guess it, right. I guess it, you know, it establishes that she has some, I don't want to say affinity for, but, you know, a connection with the ship beyond just, oh, I'm just renting a shuttle from these guys. Like that.
Yeah. I think it's just shorthand for that's her home. Don't lie. You know, like. And I love that some of this is important story points. And then, like, the stuff with Wash is just funny. Just, you know, it builds the character between him and Zoe, but it's just funny stuff. Not every one of them gives major plot points here. Like, some of them are just character building funny bits.
Now, the way that Kaylee talks has always felt weird to me, and not necessarily in a bad way. I mean, it feels like she should have a Southern accent, or at least some sort of an accent, and she never does. And so, like, which doesn't make any sense, obviously, in the future. Like, I mean, 500 years in the future, they wouldn't be speaking English that we could even understand, right? When you think about what English sounded like 500 years ago, you know, they'd be speaking a language that we could sort of barely be mutually intelligible. So you're already sort of, but so clearly she's meant, you know, she is coded as this sort of bumpkin, and she's introduced as such when you know, in a later episode when we see her like first.
I think, you know, you make a good point. She is in every way a Southern girl, like a girl who would, like, you'd meet a girl from Texas who could fix any car in the universe. She's adorable. She's fast. She talks fast. She's, you know, but like, I think
she
might seem naive in some ways, but in other ways she is completely worldly and experienced, and don't mess with her. And I think that if you kind of hang an accent on it, it's like you always like to say it's like a hat on a hat.
Yeah. But then again, the speech, again, I think it works because this is supposed to be a future place that, like, that
are they looking under plates for a human being?
Well, they're just looking for contraband or anything they can find, I think.
Now, here's something that bugs me a little bit. In the world of spaceships, hiding somebody on the outside. Yeah. Yes. In the world where everyone has a spaceship, the antagonists, the cops, would think to look. They would think to look outside.
Or they would think to look. I mean, you know, there's some complement of spacesuits from which two are missing, which would be suspicious. I don't know. It is neat on one level, though.
No, it's not I love this shot of her just looking at space and loving it, and he's terrified. No reason. Yeah. Just, you know, just a little character beat. No, you don't, the episode doesn't need it, but the characters are just built on stuff like that.
Yeah, well, and, you know, there was the earlier discussion where he was, you know, freaked out about the idea of getting in the spacesuit and being out in space.
Mm-hmm. I would. Would you want to be like free space?
I wanted to be an astronaut when I was in college and younger. I was on a track to try to be, and then I realized that somebody with claustrophobia and an anxiety disorder probably shouldn't be going into space. But it would be amazing if I were ever one day able to do so. Not to mention vertigo. Like, I would be terrible in space, but I still want to do it. I would be the worst astronaut in the history of the world.
I don't know. Uh-oh, he bristles. See, now I love this bit. It's good writing. This guy brings up his military history because he knows that it'll get under mouse skin. And when you get under somebody's skin, that's when you get the information you want, right? So I love that this character is not written. Mal does win him over through good methods. But if you write this character as dumb, that's just cheating. Oh, our hero's outsmarted a dumb cop. Great. You know, but like, you have to make him somewhat intelligent or somewhat knowledgeable for this whole to work. And that's why.
That's a great line right there. Where he's like, you know, why would you name your ship after a battle you were on the wrong side of? And he goes, we were on the losing side. I still don't think we were on the wrong side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good. It's something that people need to hear. Just being on the losing side does not necessarily mean you were on the wrong side. And you know, that's a good message, you know? I mean,
the show never, and again, this is maybe a thing they would have explored if they'd had more time, but they never really sort of like give you any idea for why the Alliance was so, there's always reasons why they wanted all the planets unified. Like whether it was, you get the sense just based on how all these Alliance people act that it was a very sort of, it was less about sort of empire and conquest and more about officiousness and
exploration for plunder kind of thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't really feel like that was that. It feels like it was less about that and more just about law and order kind of like,
Everybody's
gotta be under the same thing. You don't get the sense that they're like the empire, you know, or like that they're, you know, like the
no,
Roman
no, no. But there is a different kind of evil. Something that's just completely impersonal and officious in every way is evil in a different way than somebody who's aggressively destroying planets with a giant Death Star.
But I don't, that's what I'm saying, is that I don't know that they are ever really coded as being evil. They're coded as being adversarial and being officious and being very much interested in controlling things, but not necessarily like, I mean, I guess they are because of what they do to River, but at the same time, like, you, the show never really like paints them as this big evil entity.
No, no, it really, I mean, not to, I'm not even going to say which party, but the Alliance is essentially a political party, Republican, Democrat, call it what you will. And Mal was on their side and then got him and his people got royally screwed. And he is now no longer a part of that party. Like, you know, like that, that's the way I look at the Alliance.
You well, know, so you, my said, own you said, wait, so I think we made a mistake on this, honestly. And in the first commentary that we did, because he never fought for the Alliance. He was always fighting against the Alliance.
No,
like I went back and rewatched the episode. He's fighting with, and then he just said it right there. Like the opening scene of the entire series is him fighting in Serenity Valley, and he's fighting against the Alliance. He was fighting against the Alliance from the beginning.
Then who? No, because then who betrayed him?
Nobody betrayed him. They were fighting against the Alliance, and then the Rebel people said to them, basically, "We've made a decision."
Oh, and then the Rebels just surrendered. Right?
Yeah.
Well, he was betrayed by his party either way.
Yeah, but he didn't turn against the Rebels as a result. He was.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. It might have been even more interesting, though, if he was fully Joe Alliance before then. We don't really know. We don't really see much of what Mal was like before the war ever, you know?
I mean, I don't get the sense that he was ever pro-Alliance.
No, but I mean, you could also, I mean, look at it like Solo. What did Solo want to do? He wanted to go and join the Imperial force because he thought that was the way you got out of, out of poverty or out, you know, you would go and join Darth Vader or the Emperor's, you know, and then he realized, oh, that's not the good side. No, I don't want to be on that side. Like, that's how I looked at it.
Oh, I mean, maybe, you know, before the events of all of this stuff, but even the opening narration that he does, in the one that he does himself, there's a line that alludes to the fact that he was fighting for the Alliance the whole time. I don't know. It gets to one of those interesting backstory questions that they might have eventually got to, but I don't think there's anything in world that exists right now where that would indicate that might be the case.
This, to me, again, is interesting. You know, interesting writing for the Alliance cop. It's he is still kind of a dick, but he doesn't. He has his own code. Mal ends up saving them, and he lets them go. Now, well, if they were,
yeah, I mean, like he feels
if they were
like,
just yeah. monsters, they'd have been like, "Yeah, you saved our life. Now we're going to destroy your ship anyway." You know,
right?
There's some kind of.
It's like they're fighting against a bureaucracy more so than they're fighting against some, you know, evil conglomerate.
And it does create that idea of, all right, this cop, you know, wouldn't call him a nice guy, but he doesn't screw them. He doesn't, you know, betray them. So even within the Alliance, there are some relatively moral men and women. So, you know, it's another way.
Well, I mean, you know, I think possibly, And I'm trying to think of, you know, it may even have had some relation to what was going on in our world at that time where, you know, you have people who are starting wars in far off places to try to, quote, liberate them and bring them democracy and stuff. And, you know, that Americans can't admit that they've been the bad guys in various different guises over the course of many, you know, over the past century, and
well, I don't want to get
in some cases too, but like that there's a sense in which sort of the bureaucracy of like, okay, well, we're liberating people, or we're doing a good thing by going in and putting these people under our thumb, is sort of the classic justification of every empire throughout history.
Boy, is that good timing or what? Reaver boy showed up just as they were about to discover.
So now, okay, so this to me definitively disproves this idea of it being some an infection that can be passed from person to person, because he would totally have it now. That guy would become a Reaver. The Alliance guy.
The cop. Yep. True. Unless it's, you know, maybe the argument would be the Reavers have countless number of ampules of this drug, and they inject it into one of their victims each time.
Yeah, you but know, again, they never then like that. I mean, this is the thing about the Reavers that kind of just doesn't has never quite sat all the way well with me is this idea that they are these berserkers essentially, but they can fly ships. They can think and plan ahead. They have, they have
right,
tactics,
right?
And whatever else that they're not literally just mad. Like they have some humanity still left in them and some intelligence still left. Cool.
Yeah, it is a Reaver heavy episode. I had a really good time. This is one of my very favorite episodes. I would say top third. You call this a top third episode?
Yeah. It's
all right.
It's hard to say because they're all good. So
thank you all for tuning in to this Patreon episode. Steven and I are just going to keep rolling and go on to episode 4, which might be my very favorite episode of all Shindig. So thanks for tuning in.
Bye-bye.